Welcome. My name is Lee Maxey. I'm the CEO here at MindMax, and we do a series of podcasts we call Mind Maxing. And this series is called Reflections and Repositioning. And if you're wondering how higher education is dealing with the global pandemic and their positioning for the future, this podcast is for you. We'll be speaking with some very interesting and smart people who are deans and directors at some of the leading institutions in the United States, hearing about their reflections and how their institutions or how they see higher ed as a whole repositioning itself for the future. So please join me as we hear from one of our interesting guests. Hello, and welcome to another of Mind Maxing's podcasts. And I'm glad to be here with a good friend of mine, John Caron, who is the provost at Excelsior College. I've known John for many, many years at actually several different institutions. And I'm here with John to talk about reflections on 2020 and some other thoughts. But we'll start off, John, with welcome. And it's been a heck of a year, and I'm interested to hear your reflections on this past year.
Thanks, Lee. It's great to be here on this podcast with you. 2020, when I look back, what can you say? It was one hell of a year. Glad it's over. But, you know, I think it taught us a lot of things that we could never have imagined or foreseen. For example, like everybody else, we had to move to a more distributed workforce model and a flexible workforce model. And at Excelsior, we were able to do that pretty agilely, if you will. I think we were able to get everybody 100% working remotely in about 6 days, which, you know, we're pretty proud of. But again, it's taught us a lot about how we do our work. And here we are now, fast forward to 2021, and it's top of mind because we're trying to figure out what's next. And I imagine we'll end up, like most organizations, with some sort of a hybrid type of model. But we're still trying to figure that out. I think it has given us tremendous opportunities to think about talent acquisition opportunities that we never had before. Ways to retain staff as well. In terms of the learning space, again, there was so much going on as institutions were trying to ramp up to online or their version of online. And Excelsior was fortunate because we are 100% online institution, and we've always been 100% online institution. So the transition for our students and our faculty was virtually non-existent. It was so seamless, which was a great position for us to be in, where I realized the challenges that other schools faced was just enormous. But it still, I think, prompted us to think about online and what's the future of online. What does that mean? We're having a lot of great conversations right now about creating a holistic Excelsior experience for our students. And that experience cuts across, the entire journey for the student. We're talking about how do you create a sense of connectedness? How do you create an experience either in the learning classroom or outside of the online classroom that's safe and that's, engaging? And I think, again, going back to 2020 and the pandemic, the need for connectedness is even greater than it ever was.
Yeah, it's funny. I reflect back that we were doing an engagement with you as this broke. And we went from having meetings on campus to needing to do everything on Zoom and made that adjustment relatively quickly in that regard. But I have been thinking of Excelsior as being very well positioned to address this from a student and faculty standpoint. That student experience, I know it's really important to you. It's really important to your new president, Dave Schgable. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that's an important focus, and you've been working on that the whole time you've been there as a provost. Yeah. What are some of the things that you've seen in this year, either in terms of a student's openness or faculty's openness to try some different things around the experience? And what are some things that you've seen that are improving or moving in the direction that you'd like?
That's a great question. I think our students are open to a different type of experience. You know, up until recently, I think I would describe the experience we were providing as more transactional, in that students would come to Excelsior, you know, to complete their degree. They would come to us with credits that they had accumulated in lots of different places, and they wanted to apply all that learning and get across the finish line. And so in many ways, it was, this is what I need. Can you provide it and help me get to my goal? But I think that what they didn't expect or didn't think about coming into that relationship was the other sort of value adds we can offer. That oftentimes they discover at the end when they do get to the finish line, you know, the great quotes at commencement, how this experience transformed their life, how it, you know, connected them to people they never would have met before, and ideas and so forth. And that's the, you know, kind of experience I think we're talking about that we want to promote more for our students. And some of the things we've discovered is that, you know, God, we just get in our own way so much. And you really helped us. Your team helped us identify where those boulders are, where we thought we were doing really well, and our processes and so forth were serving our learners really well, and in fact they weren't. They aren't. And in some cases, unfortunately, you know, in this incredibly competitive market space, if another institution is doing a better job and providing a better experience, that's, you know, probably where the student's going to go.
Gotcha. So you've had a year of yeah. Call it adjustment. In the short term, next 6 to 12 months, what are some things that Excelsior or you are doing or seeing for higher ed in general that you think will happen in the next 6 to 12 months?
One of the things we're doing, which is kind of interesting to me, is we're engaged in conversations with different institutions about partnership opportunities. And they're very different institutions. We're talking to a traditional liberal arts college in the Mid-Atlantic. We're talking to, a major University of California school on the West Coast about creating an on-ramp or a pathway from their non-credit courses and certificates to our degree path programs. And we're talking to a historically Black institution in Maryland. So first of all, there's an openness as a result of this experience we all went through in 2020 to collaborate and to partner rather than compete with each other, and to find opportunities for students to move across different institutions and self-serve in terms of what they need. And that's kind of exciting to me, because before that, higher ed, you know, college and universities were kind of closed and off to each other, or kind of had their guard up if you came and asked them, you know, how can we work together? And only kind of saw each other as competitors. So I'm kind of, excited and energized about that. We'll see where these partnership opportunities go, but that's something we're started and we'll be working on over the next 6-7 months for sure.
I remember I did a consultancy about probably 10 years ago for a faith-based institution, and I recommended to them that they partner up with all the other faith-based yep. institutions of the similar religion and yep. Or branch of religion, and yep. Like zebras, get all their hooves facing out and take the best of what each of them has. And I also recommended that to some Big Ten schools to do in their athletic, you know, yep. partner conference, and also yep. with the Fenway sisters. You know, because all of them individually are more vulnerable than if they work together. And I think we'll see a lot more partnering out of necessity, but also out of strategic interest. So, and I know, Gary Mackin, who you guys are speaking with out in California, has been a proponent of that for many, many years. So, so he's, has David Cable, who, was talking with Gary prior. So that's great. So if we take a look, John, and really, look much further ahead, and I believe that this COVID pandemic has, and other things that have happened in 2020, are really a catalyst for things that were moving in that direction in many cases, and this is accelerating that, but there may be some things that are new. So off in the distance, what are some things you see happening, 2022 and beyond?
Well, I do think we're going to see a consolidation of schools in the higher ed sector. We're going to see closures, some mergers and acquisitions, because it's just hard to sustain a market for all of these different institutions. And I think the pandemic really hurt some institutions to the point where I'm not sure if they'll be able to recover. So I think we'll see sort of a downsizing or right sizing of institutions. And that I have mixed feelings about that. I mean, I suppose, it will help, or it's a natural evolution when a particular industry or sector gets very competitive. But on the other hand, I think one of the unique things about the American higher education system is the diversity of institutions out there, and that there's something for every type of student. So to see some of these really great schools that have provided a really great experience for students go away is going to be, I think, hard to watch, but an inevitable sort of evolution, I think, of where we're going. And I think, you're going to see institutions and organizations focus more on risk management, because they're going to say, well, what's going to be the next major disruptor, and how do we make sure we're better prepared for it than we were for this pandemic, which I don't think anybody saw coming.
Yeah, I think the risk mitigation is going to be a very significant focus for a lot of people.
Yeah. And we were just talking about this earlier. I'm not quite sure yet sort of what the scorecard is going to look like on online or remote learning or distance education, whatever word you want to use for it. I think some schools were successful at transitioning and adopting, and others were not, and others, don't want anything to do with it. If anything, it left a bad taste in their mouth, unfortunately, because I think it opens up more opportunities and possibilities for learning and teaching. I think, if anything, the next 2 to 3 years, we're in a unique position to reimagine what online can be and should be. And again, I was talking about it earlier, that sense of connection and engagement. We've got to move beyond online courses and engagement, being about discussion boards and occasional emails between instructors and students. There has to be much more engagement and connection and community in the online space.
Yeah, I as a someone who handles marketing for schools and enrollment for schools, I remember in the early 2000s, people thought every online program was University of Phoenix. And dissuading people of that from a consumer standpoint was hard to do. And I think now, like then, the term online education can mean so many different things. And I do think schools like yourself, who have been delivering online for decades, versus those who are just propping something up to get through an emergency, they're not the same experiences. And I think we're going to need to re-educate the marketplace for the next several years about the difference between those two types of experiences and the many in that spectrum.
And I think the other thing that a lot of institutions are going to be doing over the next few years is what I call looking for that next big thing in higher ed that differentiates them. And I'm curious, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, has higher ed done everything it can do, or are there still, you know, opportunities to innovate and come up with things that nobody else is doing, or doing it in a different way? I hear all the time, differentiation. That's you know, what you have to differentiate yourself in this crazy competitive market, or to compete with some of these 800-pound gorillas out there. So what do you think?
As you know, I've been very impressed with, obviously, Excelsior's core differentiator in my mind, which is the ability to aggregate credit, prior learning assessment, and recognize the value that someone comes with to the educational experience. And it's something I don't think schools do a very good job at. So for higher ed as a whole, I think an innovative thing for them to do would be to reach beyond, and specifically reach down into high school and into junior high, and start working collaboratively with public school teachers who are not able to handle all of the load that they have, especially not able to handle advances in science specifically, where, you know, they're working off of the information they had from when they went to college 20 years ago, and that's not relevant in biology anymore. It's not relevant in genetics. It's not relevant in you know, biochemistry and so forth. To really go deeper into high school and middle school around things to do with coding and things to do with cyber, that those kids are very interested in, and they already probably know more than most of the teachers in the school, much less the administrators. And so I think thinking about higher ed, and I've talked about this before, higher ed has gotten this greater good pass for, you know, because they exist for the greater good, supposedly, and there's tax benefits and all sorts of stuff that come from that. But in that mentality of greater good, or in that paradigm, serve the greater good and do something outside your borders to serve the greater good. And I think that's working with, you know, single parents. That's embracing a Khan Academy model rather than how do I get, you know, my institution more profitable, or, you know, more students. But how can I serve a greater good beyond, obviously, the research, which is different from a teaching college standpoint? I think that's a great opportunity.
Yeah, no, you mentioned earlier our new president, David Scable. That's been top of mind for him because, you know, he's been in conversations with other leaders of institutions in higher ed a lot lately, where the focus is all about jobs, careers, education as a means to an end. Whatever happened to education for the greater good, or for, you know, preparing people to be successful in life, not necessarily to get a job and a career. And so he's been asking some really great questions and nudging us to think beyond what we've done for a long time, which is, you know, to structure everything we do around helping the student get a job or career.
I've been writing a lot about mental health issues in college and in general. And I think post-pandemic, you know, we have a lot of really stressed and challenged people in the world, not just our country, but in the world. And what role, you know, does education, what role does higher ed play in, you know, having a lot of the experts about how to, you know, like you say, become more resilient, be able to deal with life on life's terms, and to be able to handle what's in front of them, because it's different. And I think the paradigm of what do you do with your life has never been, you know, so multipathed as it is now. There were so few choices 100 years ago in terms of what someone would do for a job, and now, you know, it really is wide open, and that can be, you know, it's like the Cheesecake Factory menu. It's just overwhelming. I mean, and we know that causes stress in people's lives. Having too many choices can be very stressful.
That's for sure.
So, well, John, I want to thank you very much for joining us for a Mind Maxing podcast. And this has been another edition of a Mind Maxing podcast. So thank you, John.
Thank you. Great to be here.
This has been another interesting Mind Maxing podcast. Please listen to the other podcasts on this series or look for us later this summer when we release our next series of podcasts.